All right, this is friggin' ridiculous. I just lost a great episode with Jacob Bynum, so now we have another lost episode, but luckily we're here and we're gonna do part two. So I'm sitting down, I'm at Rifles Only, I'm sitting down with Jacob Bynum, owner of Rifles Only. We have the Rifles Only Brawl this weekend.
Yep, starts tomorrow.
Starts tomorrow, so I'm gonna be shooting the NRL match down here. Traveled down to Texas yesterday, but this is one of the most requested podcasts that we have. People want to know, because I go back to my history down here, and just to kind of reiterate with part of the lost episode, I think my shooting fundamentally changed when I came here. Okay, mm-hmm. So if I go back to the Marine Corps, the doctrine, everything we were taught goes back to Vietnam and the World War II. And, yep. You know, you think you're shit hot and you come out of the Marine Corps. Well, then I come down here and you're shooting, I don't want to say better, but you are shooting better. I mean, that's just a part of it. But you're shooting fundamentally different. Mm-hmm. You're straight back behind the rifle. You're going all that. And what a lot of people don't realize in the history of precision rifle, one of an earthquake change is here.
Right.
Came from Rifles Only. Yeah. You are the driver behind that. And we'll get into that a little later as far as the generational changes in things. But I look at my precision rifle shooting as going to a next level from being here.
Right.
And it was really the focus on the fundamentals, the breaking down of the shot, and all the things that you teach on a daily basis from this location that I don't think people have the right amount of appreciation for.
They don't know
the history of their own sport.
Right.
They don't know where straight back behind the rifle, 90 degree trigger finger goes. They don't even know where floating the thumb came from, and it happened here.
Yeah.
I was here the day you did it.
Yeah.
And you were doing it as a demonstration. So go into your history of shooting, talk about how you looked at all these things that people take for granted today, mm-hmm. as far as rifle shooting and fundamentals.
All right. Well, again, I did not invent the fundamentals.
We didn't invent any of this,
no,
really.
No, we didn't invent that. And, was,
and nobody's claiming you invented it. I'm just saying that the shift to doctrine.
Right.
Sort of came.
Well, you know, and yeah, a part of it was, you know, that the instructors that were out there at the time, you know, even your guys who were instructing you in the Marine Corps, you know what I mean? What they're doing is they're doing what they were told.
Right.
You know what I mean? And you had even mentioned it earlier. It's incestuous training. You know, you go out there and you do that, and you start to regurgitate information, but you don't know why, you know? And so we need to understand the why. And I've always been kind of inquisitive on this. And again, like mentioned earlier, you know, I spent, you know, some time at Thunder Ranch, you know, under Clint Smith, you know, mm-hmm. very big, huge fundamental guy. I mean, the original fundamental guy, you know what I mean? Handgun, carbine, precision rifle, whatever.
Yeah, because when Clint was in Kerrville, you were
a student and an instructor there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, take away a lot from, you know, his broad range of experience. Former Marine Corps, too. You know, mm-hmm. he's, you know, really good guy. He was a thinker. And so whenever it came to these things, you just like...
People are afraid of thinkers.
Oh, they are. They are. But, you know, thinkers have done a lot of good stuff for us now, because now mm-hmm. we got our thumb on the other side and we have a little rest to put it on.
Yeah,
so that's
kind
of cool.
That's a thinker, right?
Yeah, that's a thinker.
I need a shelf.
Yeah, I need a shelf for my thumb. but, you know, the thing about it is with the fundamentals, you know, it came, you know, why do we get straight behind the gun? It's one of the things whenever you were down here, you know, whenever you were working here for those 6 years, it was kind of like you would tell people, hey, get straight behind the gun. Well, why do we get crooked? Well, because our little green army men are crooked. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're crawling. You know what I mean? They're not shooting.
Yeah.
So it came from, you know, being able to understand that the rifle, you know, I've said it many times, say it in my video, rifle's a stupid machine. You know what I mean? It does the same thing every time.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as getting straight behind the gun, you know, Jacob Godfredson, bench rest guy, you know, he had brought out his 308 Bear, and we set it up, you know, out on the tower, you know, with the... We were talking about it earlier about the cost of the bipod. You know, is their front rest.
Their front rests are thousands of dollars.
Yeah,
for
exactly. But, you know, we manipulate that trigger with a pencil, and the rifle would always just go straight back. You know what I mean? So, and I thought it was normal for the rifle to bounce to the left. You know what I mean? I thought it was normal. And then mm-hmm. I started thinking about it. I said, why? Why would it bounce to the left? Well, obviously, what's changed? You know, me.
And the bench rest rifles have the flat bottoms.
Right.
They're meant to slide straight back. And we're seeing that today.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the MDT chassis, look at the Arca Swiss rails.
Yep.
They're making them flat.
Sure.
So they ride the bags.
Sure.
And
but nobody's shooting them on bags.
Right. But the thing is that straight, you like you said, you put a pencil to this.
Yep.
I think a 300 Bear is pretty similar to a 308 or a 308 bear is similar to a 308 Norma.
Pretty close. Yeah.
So big.
Mm-hmm.
Big caliber.
Big caliber.
And so now you're up here with Gofferson. Gofferson's a SF guy, Vietnam. He's a writer. Used to write for Precision Rifle.
Precision Shooter Magazine.
Precision Shooter Magazine.
Yeah.
We call him Blue Steel. He's a senior porn star. And because he has a nose, man. Yeah. Gofferson's got a nose like gigantic. And so, but you looked at how bench rest functioned, and then translated that to field shooting.
Correct. Because there's one thing, like you, when you went to sniper school, Marine Corps, sniper spotter. Gun bounce to the left, who cares? You got a spotter, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that guy'll do it.
That's not my job. My job's to pull the trigger. Well, the thing about it is, there's going to come a time when your spotter, which is your spotter, but also the security guy, has also got his own business to take care of.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to take care of it on your own, too. So I just thought it'd be great if we could actually see the result of our own shot through our own optic. You know, well, how do we do that? Well, we have to consider, how do we stop that rifle from bouncing to the left? Because it doesn't do it normally. You know, it's only when we get on it. So there's three places where it can come from. The junction in your shoulder, coming straight back on the trigger, not going right or left on the trigger, and then how you're holding the gun. And so whenever you go through those things and you start to put them all together and you're doing them right, the gun just goes boom, you know, and you can see it doesn't move off at all.
Right.
You know, and it doesn't matter if it's, you know, a 338 Lapua, you know, the 300 Norma, whatever, you know, if it's a 6 Creedmoor, you know, it's just going to come straight back into your shoulder and you're never going to lose sight of your bullet. So that's kind of where it came from, you know, and the fundamentals on natural point of aim, they kind of get glossed over, you know, in a lot of different things. They get glossed over. And the thing about it is what we don't understand, much the way a lot of people now don't understand the history of their sport, a lot of people don't understand the history of fundamentals, you know, because there was at one point, one of us humans, you know, we picked up a spear and we figured out we would hit more if we threw it like this, okay? The birth of fundamentals, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The birth of fundamentals. Then, you know, then it's an atlatl, then, it, you know, now we got big slingshots and, you know, we got all this kind of stuff. So it's the fundamentals, and it, you know, golf has fundamentals. Tennis has fundamentals.
Right.
You know, everything has fundamentals. Well, this sport is no different. You know, it's no different.
Speaking of golf, I tweeted, I think it was Mickelson. Is he the one? Phil Mickelson was shooting a 6.5 Creed in California with somebody, slapping the trigger, no fundamentals, and I tweeted him back. I'm like, hey, Phil, fundamentals are fucking in shooting, too.
Yeah.
Because he didn't follow through.
Right.
Could you imagine a golf guy if you went up to him and you just hit the ball and stopped?
Yeah, I know.
And walked away?
Yeah, he'd rip you a new one.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's all the same. But what we saw, you know, with that, and you know how many people we've trained out here since, you know, since the mid-90s and, you know, doing competitions since the mid-90s. And so it's kind of like, yeah, a lot of fundamentally trained shooters. But then, you know, now it's kind of like one of those points, well, we can buy some skill here. You know what I mean? We can buy skill. You know, we can go and... we can go and spend, you know, what can we spend on a scope now, Frank? $6,000 if we want?
Six if you want.
If you want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's like we talked about earlier.
Mounts and everything, you're in a 7 range.
Yeah, exactly. So we can spend as much as we want, but best gun, you know what I mean? Accuracy International, any of the custom gun builders that both of us have known for years and years, they can give you an absolute work of art that'll shoot in the twos, you know what I mean? But if you can't fundamentally drive that gun,
right?
You know, you're going to get beat by a 13-year-old girl, which happened last month.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Here at our club match. And it was kind of funny because she went out there and she got 10th place. She tied for 10th out of 60 shooters. And then, of course, the rest of the boys, when the week followed, you know, they were giving each other crap on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And so I finally got on our South Texas page and I said, as long as you guys realize back in 20 and 25th place that you got your ass handed to you by a 13-year-old girl shooting a 6 Creedmoor. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
But she's skillful, you know what I mean? And they had guns that were better, you know, and she just smoked them. And it was
she
great.
She pays attention.
She pays attention.
We talked about that. The girls have no ego.
Yep.
You know, that they pay attention and they don't have the bad habits coming up. So that's an important thing that people don't realize. So what do they focus on? They focus on what you told them in the fundamentals.
Right.
Do this, do that, do the other thing.
Yeah. And, you know, we know the fundamentals. You know what I mean? We know them, but we don't pay attention to them. Case in point, you know, and you've seen it out here too. Whenever you were, you know, training with me out here, you know, you get somebody shooting and they're shooting on their strong side and everything else. And then you switch them over to the support side and they start bitching. I can't see. But then they pull off these little bitty tiny groups.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's just like, all right, Why? Well, they were uncomfortable, so they started playing the fundamentals. You know what I mean? So we see that a lot. You know, not across the board, but you see it a lot.
There are always, because you're now, like I said, there's no bad habit on their left side.
Right.
They're paying more attention to what they're supposed to be doing, and they're going through that mental checklist.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it is with the new shooters, you got to get them. And we talked about this. Like I said, we got a lost episode here. I'm freaking sick again. But it's the repetitions.
Yep.
That you're getting in those repetitions, and I think new shooters miss that part of the game, the repetition side of it, but you focus on that here.
Yeah.
You're a 6-day PR one or two.
Used to be. Now we're a 5-day.
Okay, 5-day.
Yeah, we're a 5-day now.
But still, you're 5-day classes, and you're keeping them on their belly a little longer, and then you're incrementally adding in new elements to
right.
it. Okay,
correct.
So now we got your fundamentals in the prone. Mm-hmm. Okay, now let's get you off your belly.
Yep.
Okay, now let's get you to the mover.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now let's get you over here and try it on an obstacle.
Yep.
You know, all these different things, and as you said earlier, it takes repetitions until they start putting everything back together
right.
in the new position.
Yeah. Because once you switch to a new thing, you know, it could be a clock.
Right.
You know what I mean? It could be a series of obstacles you got to go through. The fundamentals just get blown out of the water. You know what I mean? They just forget them all. Slapping the trigger, holding their breath, all this other kind of crap. Well, after they do it a couple times, get the repetitions in, they start to apply the fundamentals. You know, start to apply them a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. And then the next thing you know, they're applying them and getting pretty good hits.
And they're doing well.
Yeah.
And it's not, I mean, go back to the old days back here where everybody shot 308s or no breaks, no suppressor. You know, there was... If you had a suppressor, you were like a rock star.
Yeah.
You know, you had mics up the road with the jet,
mm-hmm.
and that was really all that anybody ran. And that was like 2004.
Yeah,
I think
whenever
the jets hit the market.
Yeah,
and you know, so it was slow.
Mm-hmm.
Now everything moves so fast.
Yeah,
because there's new product out there. There's people buying things. They're you know, like you'd said, they're trying to buy skill.
Right.
Yep. Instead of investing time. And really, you could see guys who bought skill but still invest time who do well.
Sure. Yeah, you get different people doing different things. But it's like I get that question all the time, like email or text or whatever says, you know, hey, I'm just getting into this. What should I do? Well, first thing you should do is go get a rifle you can afford.
Right.
You know what I mean? Something to where, you know, that it's not going to hurt you. You know, get a scope that is going to work. That's what we need. But then you're going to need some good ammo and some good training.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's kind of... Just to touch on training a little bit, you know, after having done it for so long, find somebody who knows what they're doing.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's not just regurgitation. The ones that know the why. You know what I mean? And again, there was another conversation I was having with somebody else the other day, and it was kind of like, you know, I've had people come through here that have been to this school or that school, and I got to fix everything. You know what I mean? Then I have some that come through, they've been to this school, and I got to fix nothing. You know what I mean? So, again... You got to put in the time. You know, you got to put in the time.
Well, and that why is important. Don't just pay for somebody that's just going to take you to their range and let you shoot.
Right.
If they're 100% of their time on the spotter behind you, what are you learning from them?
Yeah, exactly.
You're letting him call your wind and make your corrections because you got a spotter now. It's spotter, sniper.
Yeah.
Back to that.
Yeah.
And people get paid for that.
Yeah.
Instead of being on the line and being in front of people and being, I mean, there's more pictures of you and I kneeling down, I mean, we're deaf because of it.
Yeah.
Kneeling down alongside people and not back behind them on a spotter.
Right.
They got a glass. Let them see.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we'll fix you.
Yeah.
If you're doing it right, you'll see your own thing. But talk about you. You had a really good way of bringing this to a subconscious level and talking about the fundamentals from how you adjust natural point of aim so it's automatic to sight picture, setting up the rifle. That becomes. And then going into your breathing, trigger, and
sure. Yeah. Well, the main thing about it is that your main fundamental is going to be natural point of aim, and that thing has to become innate. You know what I mean? It's got to become to where you don't even think about it. So how do you do that? The build and break drill is how you do it. You know what I mean? You build that position, you get up from that position, you go, you build it again, you get up again. The thing about it is, there's a problem with that. We're not making any noise. You know what I mean? We're not making any noise, and we're not shooting rounds. And the only way you can get better is if you shoot rounds. Nothing could be further from the truth.
Right.
You know, you're going to get
better.
Dry fire is where it's at. Yeah. And it's just like, you got to do that. You got to just build and break that position. It's like, I have a class in here that says, why pick out a random student? What do you do better than you do anything else? You know, they're a computer programmer from Seattle, Washington, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I don't know. So, well, let me tell you what I do better than anything else. just pick my nose. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I'm good at it, dude. You know what I mean? It's if we're having a conversation and you see me start to do this with my fingers, and the time it took you to blink, I was in
already,
and out.
Already
I was already in and out. And why? Because of repetition. You know what I mean? We're really good at it. It doesn't mm-hmm. matter. I go have a 12-pack of beer. I never poke myself in the eye. I never poke myself in the ear. Yep. I'm right up that nostril every time. Well, that's the way NPA has to be. You know, mm-hmm. it has to be to where it's something that you don't have to think about anymore. And then again, you know, the thing about it is your next fundamental is going to be your sight picture. Well, if I'm craning up or craning back with my neck, if I'm not, you know, getting
right,
to where...
Right, you're hunting for the scope.
If I'm hunting for the scope, well, I got a problem. I need to make some adjustments on there. Fortunately, pretty much all the guns, even the ancient guns, you know, you were able to adjust that gun for you, you know, at least to a better degree than if you just go pick it up.
Right.
So again, you know, we're solving that. You know, we're solving that, you know, that part of the sight picture. You know, and then the biggest one is breathing. You know, it's like, I don't know what it is, but when somebody picks up a rifle, they want to hold their breath.
Always.
It's like, okay, all right, if you pick up like an empty scuba tank, then hold your breath. You know what I mean? Because you got trouble.
Yeah.
Otherwise, just keep breathing. You know what I mean? And so I see breathing as probably one of the biggest issues.
It's my hardest thing to fix. From the,
oh, yeah,
it's my
absolutely.
Training scars from back in the day. Mm-hmm. It's the hardest thing that I have to work on.
Well, it was even in the manual.
Yes.
You know, it was in the manual. You know,
wrong.
It was wrong. You know, hold your breath, you know, wait, pull the trigger. It's like, dude, don't, get this out of the manual post haste. It's got to leave.
Yeah.
You know, you can't go over to where, you know, someone gets excited. The first thing that's going to happen, you get that, you know, adrenaline dump, tachypsyche effect. The only way out is breathing. You know what I mean? That's the only way out.
Yeah.
So you got to breathe. Then trigger control, again, it goes back to being straight behind the gun. You know, being straight behind the gun didn't necessarily solve the rifle hop. But what would do is if I was coming back on the trigger, like back into the right, but rifle's going to hop, dude. You know
yes.
what I mean? Rifle's going to hop. So we got to position our hand, 90-degree trigger finger, to where we're coming straight back on the trigger. Triggers are made to go forward and backward. Unfortunately, most of them have a little bit of lateral movement, too, mm-hmm. and you want to delete that because it's just like a tuning fork. You know, it's just going to bounce away from whatever solid. That's going to be, you know, your finger. And then again, you know, the follow through. There was, and again, it was training for the longest time, and I'm sure you even heard this in the Marine Corps. Once you fire that gun, get on the bolt.
It's broken, right?
It's broken.
Guns
broke it, fix it. You know, get on the bolt. Well, you were coming off that gun
before
the bullet got out. You know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. you were popping that trigger and straight to the bolt. And that was the way it was trained for the longest time. You have to, the trigger just starts the machine. Give it a second.
Yeah.
You know, give it a second. Let that bullet get out. And then once that's out, then run the bolt. So it's not as fast. Say, yeah, well, if you go in and you miss six times, you know, because you're slapping the shit out of the trigger, all right, that's on you.
Yeah, if I hit it the first time, I'm quicker than the guy who missed six.
Exactly. If I just follow through on the trigger, you know, even if I got to have the follow-up shot, you know what I mean? Even if I need a follow-up shot, it's still better because my follow-up shot's actually going to mean something. You know, mm-hmm. my correction that I put on is actually going to mean something. So, yeah, again, it's not... You got to follow those fundamentals, and it's not that difficult.
Mm-hmm.
You just got to put in the time, man. You got to have that repetition, build those neural pathways in your head to where it's perfect every single time.
No, it's great to listen to you, because like I said, nobody gives you the credit for what changed down here. This was the nucleus of precision rifle shooting in the late 90s, early 2000s. Mm-hmm. You had Badlands, you had Storm Mountain. They were military doctrine doing the same thing the military guys did.
Yeah.
You fundamentally changed and said, you thought about it. Why? Why did this happen? Why is this going on? And you changed the way your body position was.
Mm-hmm.
You changed the way you guys ran the bolt.
Mm-hmm.
You came up a little bit on your elbows and you're much smoother running that bolt and you're not cranking that elbow up into the ear and running the bolt.
And lifting up your head.
Yes, and lifting your head.
Yeah, lifting your head.
You're staying on the gun. I mean, we used to not lift your head because we didn't want somebody to see us.
Right.
But so many people, prairie dog, or you know, get the gooseneck and try to look. They got a 25 power scope. They shoot, and then they want to look and see if they hit the thing.
I know, with a regular eyeball.
You know, so to me, it goes back to that history, but it goes to... You know, like I said, that 90-degree trigger, that straight back. Even the speed drills. When I first came down here, you guys were shooting shit so fast.
Mm-hmm.
And you were having races.
Yeah.
And part of that was you had to be smooth.
Yeah.
To be fast.
Yeah.
You had to be efficient. And I remember with Godferson, he had the left-hand bolt here.
Yeah.
And guys were going faster, running in on the left side.
Right.
And staying on the trigger and doing all that.
But, oh, yeah. But all that came from that inordinate amount of dry practice that was going on. It's like we were talking about my my famous AW, you know, with, you know, it's on its 20th barrel now.
Yeah, Jacob has an AW that has easily over 150,000 rounds through the receiver. I remember it was what, like, it was 93,000, you broke the bolt stop, the mushroom pin broke.
Yep.
And we replaced that. I remember calling AI and getting that replaced. And now you're up around 150, but you have over 20 barrels on that gun.
Yeah, over 20 barrels on that gun.
But it's still the original AW with 150,000 plus rounds.
And I guarantee you, conservatively, it's got a million dry presses on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no question. No question. I mean, I just dry fired that sucker forever.
And that goes back to a big part of your classes is building positive neural pathways.
Correct.
So it's repetitions, and it's not just going through the motions. How many guys, like, you'll tell class, and you could talk on this better than I can, but you tell the class dry fire.
Mm-hmm.
How many guys are just kind of...
They
live...
yeah, they're just going and doing the clicks. When I go to dry fire, you know, I do it. I put on my gun belt, you know what I mean? I put on my hearing protection.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if I got a good session, you know, a good hour, 15 minute, hour and a half session, you know, from different positions and stuff, my shoulder kind of hurts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I've felt that recoil in my head. You know, I've treated every dry fire as if it was a real round.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of, and you can't, you know, again, I really tout dry fire, but again, that's not mine. You know what I mean?
No.
That comes from, you know, the people that came before. Look at Miklik, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah,
was it a Japanese guy or something? Couldn't even shoot live rounds and came in handgun stuff?
Yeah. Went to California and whipped everybody?
Yes.
Yeah.
Couldn't shoot live rounds, but
no guns.
Practice.
He
came
dry practiced.
Here to the U.S. and smoked people.
Yeah. I mean, it was amazing.
Right.
Amazing. And that's just the power of dry fire. You got to do it.
And Tubb's a huge dry fire. Tubb doesn't, he's another proponent of dry fire that way, where he doesn't go out and practice on the line. He practices in dry practice. Mm-hmm. And when he goes to the line, he's just doing like...
Well, whenever he was winning all of his, you know, 11 national championships or whatever, you know, the only time he would go live was to zero a gun or to compete.
Right.
100% of his practice was dry.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
Because you can get so much more out of it. It just doesn't jibe with the way people think now. You know what I mean? They want to go out. Again, they got $8,000 into a gun, so it's going to come out of the back of a, you know, climate-controlled Suburban, and it's going to go sit over here, and then we're going to go shoot some groups to justify all this money that we just spent, and then we're going to baby it, and we're going to clean the shit out of it, and we're going to put it back up and everything else.
Post it on the internet.
Yeah, post it on the internet.
Tell my wife's friends.
Yeah, exactly. Come look at me. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just, I mean, it's a tool. You know, it's a tool. Just when at Rifles Only, I started a long time ago. If you come in and you can prove to me that you broke a firing pin from dry fire, Rifles Only will replace the firing pin.
Right.
It's never happened. Okay, so it's one of two things. Either it doesn't hurt the gun, or people aren't dry firing enough. I don't know which.
Yeah, but either way, 50 bucks in your pocket because nobody's ever asked for a new firing pin.
I know. I had one guy try to, you know, kind of weasel his way into it once, but we shut him down. So, no, that's not it. That's not it.
But it's in, you know, going from, like... Let's talk about the competitions, because competitions were born here.
Mm-hmm.
Modern competitions were born at Rifles Only. And there's no ifs, ands, buts. They can try to rewrite history all they want.
Yeah.
But the modern match was born here.
Yeah.
And so tell us about the mindset that you had going into that and where you see it today and where it should go tomorrow.
Right. Well, you know, a lot of the things that we were doing, you know, is you get it from... You know, again, as you know, we train a lot of military, we train a lot of government agencies. So, you know, we become friends with these guys and, you know, we get information, you know, this shot was happened this way, you know, this hot shot happened this way, you know, building, you know, we were in the hindsight this much. It's just a lot of different stuff. So we wanted to be able to, how can we make that easier for that operator?
Right.
You know what I mean? How can we make, like, assure them whenever they do pull the trigger that they are getting hit? Then again, my own personal experience growing up hunting, you know, it's like you live in South Texas, you hunt. Well, what do you hunt? Well, you hunt rabbits, you hunt javelinas, you hunt pigs, you hunt birds, you know, you do all this stuff. It's just a hunting culture. And so, you know, it's not uncommon to, you know, go over and my first long gun was a 270 Weatherby Vanguard. You know, it's 270 Winchester, but in a Weatherby Vanguard. Still have that gun, by the way.
Yep.
And, you know, it was great because it was a lightweight gun. You know, you're, you know, out in the brush, you know, looking for whitetail and stuff like that. And then, you know, the next thing you know, you got to go make a shot and then you try to get as most stable as you can. And then you plop down behind it and you look through your scope and all you see is grass.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So, all right, so we got to lean against a tree now. Or we got to do a positional shot. You know, we have to do these things. And it was kind of like, why not incorporate those things into it? You know, and also we wanted the thinking aspect of it. You know, remember, we used to do Kim's games.
Yes.
You know what I mean? We used to do stocks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we used to do a lot of different things that are just, I mean, again, I think probably half the people who are shooting, you know, competitions
have no interest in.
Well, they may not even know what a Kim's game is.
They don't.
You know what I mean?
Probably not.
And that's fine. You know, it's the evolution. The sport has evolved. But, you know, it's like visiting, Terry Cross was down here one time whenever I had done that really extensive run and gun over there.
Yep,
it was
yep.
like, you know, you... Where you finished was 400 yards from where you started, you know, and there were 9 obstacles with like 10 targets out there. Remember on the culverts and everything else?
Yep, yep.
So Terry Cross finishes it. And I said, Terry, what did you think about that? And he goes, we're hitting more shit now because you're actually making us shoot at it.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And that's true.
I mean, we had culverts stacked up just to let you know. So it was about a 300-400 yard.
Yeah, it was about 400 yards.
Obstacle course, and it was concrete culverts.
Uh-huh.
And various heights and positions, and some of them were thrown into mess, some of them were stacked up in pyramids, but you went up, down, in, around, over, and had to shoot targets from those positions.
Yep.
And to me, one of the most illuminating things, and this goes back, we'll talk about your safety side of things, because this is, you're huge for safety, and this plays into that, was you made them remove the mag from their bolt gun.
Yeah.
And the first time we ran that in a match, nobody could reload their gun.
Yeah.
And for us, it was safety because we're running people around an obstacle.
Right.
But then you found out there was a training issue there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And today, they're doing everything they can do to not reload.
Right. Yeah.
Versus when we saw it, we said, do it more.
Yeah.
And practice it, repetitions.
Yeah.
So go into that, and then we'll go into the safety side of
things. Yeah, well, the thing about it is, it's just sound like, you know, if I go out and, you know, if I'm going to go, you know, do some handgun practice or some carbine practice, you know, I'm certainly not the fastest, you know what I mean?
Right.
But I can get that gun up and running in a big hurry because we practice our reloads, you know what I mean?
Yes.
We know there's going to be a lot of shots, and, you know, any good instructor worth of salt is going to have you, you know, you're going to hit that magazine well every single time. You know, there's different methodologies that people do, and they brought up all sorts of stupid shit too.
Yeah,
but
the contractor shuffle.
Yeah, all kinds of weird stuff, and that's fine. You know, I mean, everybody has their own thing, and again, you can't, in the firearms industry, you know, there's two words you have to watch out for: always and never.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so again, every situation is different, more tools in your toolbox, but we noticed that people just did not know where that magazine well was because we weren't practicing it with the bolt gun, you know. So now it becomes, you know, a training issue, you know. And so, just like you said, whenever you go over and you can reach down in that pouch and put that other 10 round mag in, you know, smooth as silk, you know, that makes you a better shooter. You know
right.
what I mean? It makes you a better shooter for stage-wise.
Well-rounded marksman.
Yeah. Whether you're in a stage in a competition or you're out in a hunting scenario, you know, the thing about it is, go shoot prairie dogs. You know what I mean? You want to learn how to change magazines.
Yeah.
Let's get after it. You know, or, you know, the guys that are actually doing it for a living. You know, you never know. There's a reason that the SR-25 has a 20-round magazine. You know what I mean? Because there's...
A lot. Target-rich environment.
Target-rich environment, exactly right. You know, there's a reason that we have those magazines that hold so many rounds. But, you know, the thing about it is you know, like, I had that accident myself personally on the mousetrap, you know, and I dropped a gun straight down.
Off the mousetrap,
and it hit the buttstock, and it was just like you get that one flash moment. And I remember looking down the barrel, and I could actually see the bolt face. Fortunately, what I had done was I had made sure that the magazine was off and the bolt was to the rear. I've known that at some places they don't even make you pull your mag back.
Right. I was just gonna say we've seen safety suffer because we've grown so quick, so fast, big.
Yep.
And you're known for that, the safety side of things. You're the gold standard for safety. You've always been, even to this day. And so, kind of go, you know, talk about like that zero tolerance policy and how it's part of shooting.
Yeah.
How, I mean, think of the tier one guys we've worked with.
Mm-hmm.
If they fuck up, they're out.
Yeah. Yeah, they're out.
All it takes is one. They could be the shit hottest fucking guy on the unit.
Yeah.
And they have to start all over again. What is it, like a year later they can come back and try?
I don't know if it's a year, but they got to go through everything again.
Yes.
You know what I mean? They got to start at the bottom again. And it's happened.
Mm-hmm.
It's happened. And again, it's I don't know. The thing about it is with the safety aspect of it, it's just that, you know, growing up and again with the hunting background, you know, I know what a deer looks like whenever I hit him in the chest cavity.
When you shoot it.
Yeah. I know what it looks like inside. And then you go and you see this stuff on TV, you know, and Bruce Willis takes an AK round in his upper shoulder,
yes.
And then he kills like 50 more people. No.
He shot the gun. Yeah, he put the gun in his shoulder and shot the guy behind him.
Well, with a pistol, okay, maybe.
Yeah.
But I've seen him take an AK round. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I tell you what. Bruce is dead. Bruce is fucking dead.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Especially that close.
Yeah, he took an AK round. to his upper shoulder, and I'm sorry, dude, he didn't make it. You know what I mean? And I think, you know, there's the Chinese were, you know, great. They invented gunpowder. It wasn't for fireworks.
No.
It was to kill. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's the whole purpose of it.
Yeah, yeah. They were fighting wars, man.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you think about it, if anybody's interested, I'll leave the percentage out during this podcast. But go back and look at the first Gulf War and find out how many casualties were due friendly to fire. Friendly fire.
We used to have that in the PowerPoint, I think we did.
Yeah, yeah.
It was huge. It was thousands.
Yeah. I mean, it's up above 45% mm-hmm. were friendly fire. And then again, you know, I've got some bad habits, you know, like coffee, cigarettes, yes. and Google. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? And I Google firearms accidents as soon as I wake up every morning. And I tell you, if you want to screw up your brain, do that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it lets you know that there are some true accidents, or are there? You know
right.
what I mean? That's the question. And it's negligence. You know, and it's you hear about, you know, all sorts of accidents happening here. One happened up in I forget where it was, but a gunsmith was actually at a range. He went and he was working on a...
I can pause it. Hang on.
Don't worry about it.
Okay.
So he's working on a gun. Well, the gun discharged, went through two walls mm-hmm. and hit a pedestrian outside. Killed him. Deader than fuck.
Right.
You know, it's like, come on. Come on. We got to start paying attention to what we're doing. There's four rules. You know what I mean? And I didn't invent them.
Right.
They came along before me or you were ever born. You know, and even if we were twice our age, they came along before that. And there's a reason for them.
Yeah, we can combine our age and they were before that. That
exactly. Exactly. And we're not spring chickens. And so the thing about it is, why do we have to just continue to have the same stupid shit happen? Well, it's because we're human. That's why. And it's like, I'll start a class in here and I can say, all right, I've got this. I had a mixed civilian class this week. And I just tell them flat out, I know some of you guys for years. Some of you guys just walked through the door. I said, I could be sitting here in front of a bunch of tier one operators, or I could be sitting here in front of a bunch of 14-year-old Girl Scouts who want to learn how to shoot a 22. All of you scare me equally.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because of the fact that no matter how good you are, no matter how conscientious you are, you can screw up, you know, because we're human. And so we got to guard against it. You know,
yeah.
we got to guard against it. And again, I just don't feel like, you know, the big safety rule there, you know, is never cover anything with a muzzle you're not willing to destroy. Well, policy here at Rifles Only is, you know, hey, you flag somebody with a muzzle at a match, it's a match DQ.
Yeah,
and
you're out.
That's NRL wide now. And it's not that I'm going over here and I'm instructing my range officers.
You're not looking for a gotcha.
I'm not looking for a gotcha. You know what I mean? If I see it getting ready to happen, hey, watch your muzzle. You know what? General reminder,
right.
I'm not waiting to push somebody out. I don't want to push anybody out.
Yeah.
But I don't want anybody getting flagged with a muzzle either.
These are your customers.
Exactly.
You want all your customers to feel
yeah.
safe. So you're not going to go and set a customer up.
Right.
But at the same time, if he does something against another customer,
sure.
you can't stay.
Look at it like this, Frank. Let's say you didn't have a daughter, but you had a son.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And you weren't in the firearms industry. And then all of a sudden, your son, who's 15... You know what I mean? Who's living under your roof in high school decides, hey, Dad, I really want to do this long range competition. And he starts bringing you these stuff and he figures out, okay, well, Frank's thinking, you know what? I'm going to have to spend $40,000 on a gun.
Mm-hmm.
I've got $2,000 on a scope. Whenever I take him to these things, we figure $2,000, hotel, everything else. So I tell you what, why don't we go down to Rifles Only and we'll watch. We'll watch one of these competitions because you've never been. You've just seen it on YouTube.
Right,
you know what
right.
I mean? And so we're going to come in and we're going to watch. So you call me and you say, hey, me and my son want to come down there and watch the event. Is that okay? I said, yeah, that's fine. You'll have to sign waivers and everything else. And then how would it be if we start the competition and not only do I not mention safety, but all throughout the day, they're getting flagged with the muzzle and you don't have a background in firearms. Let's just say,
yep.
let's just make that assumption. But you know that big hole
is
right there.
Yeah, is the pointy end. It's
yeah,
the
that's
sharp
the pointy end.
End.
Yeah, that's the part you don't want nothing to do with. And then you start to think, you know, this goes on for 2 days, you know what I mean? And safety's never been mentioned or anything else. Maybe a few of the competitors had NDs and stuff like that. How are you going to feel about supporting your son in a sport like that?
Right.
You know what I mean? You're going to think twice.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Hey, man, go to football. Concussion
yeah,
might be better for
exactly,
you.
Exactly, exactly. Hey, let's do something else. You know, maybe we'll ride dirt bikes or we'll do something else. But,
yeah.
you know, I can
fix a broken bone.
I can fix a broken bone, but if I take one of those rounds to the chest, it's over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you do know that.
Yeah.
Well, let's change that environment. You know what I mean? That's the way you come in now and you see me get up there in front of everyone and I spend 30 minutes talking about safety. You know what I mean? And I say, here's the rules. This is the way it's going to be. Again, not to be a dick, not to be arrogant, But whenever it comes to safety, dude, my way or the highway. You
but
know what
you
mean?
Say it's not personal.
It's
you
not.
Don't single anybody out. And people don't get that. They immediately go to butthurt.
Yeah.
I mean, and that gets us into this politics now with the butthurt thing. And we're, number one, they're trying to rewrite history because they don't know the history. So they think it started in 2012.
Right.
You know, they can't go back 20 years prior
because
they just don't have a capacity for it. But then, to me, the matches are being designed now around who they think is the best shooter in that piece of equipment they have.
Mm-hmm.
And not about a skill set.
Right.
It's more about, this guy's good, he likes this, I want him here, so I'm going to make it as friendly to him as possible, one.
Mm-hmm.
And then two is, he's running this equipment,
mm-hmm.
and this equipment excels under these conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do that.
Right.
And, you know, it, to me, it's the wrong direction.
What you're saying, I know, is absolutely true, but that's so disconnected from me.
I know. You're immune to that in a way. And I think, in wrongly, I don't want to say suffered. That's a wrong word. It's too harsh. But you've paid the penalty for sticking to your principles, mm-hmm. making sure that the match and the person is a well-rounded marksman.
Sure.
And saying, yeah, number one, safety. Number two, like you said, nobody's going to remember who wins this match freaking Monday.
I know.
Monday they will because they're going to talk about it.
Right.
But if you ask me the following Monday, mm-hmm. I'm not going to remember.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be one of those things. It's just a rifle match. It doesn't matter. We've all shot them.
Yeah.
We've all done this thing.
Absolutely.
It's nothing new. So I don't understand the movement to change a match around a person, I guess, is a way, or a click.
Could it have something to do with feeding the sponsors?
Yeah, a little bit.
Maybe.
Not as much as it should, because it's not equally feeding sponsors.
Right, right. I know what you're saying exactly.
Yeah.
And I get that, but like you say, I mean, my business is not competitions.
Right.
You know, it's not what I do. You know, I mean, I do them once a year. You and I used to do them twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
There was one time I did, I think, for 2 years, I did them four a year. They were just small, more like regional type things.
Yeah.
But, you know, what we do is we train people, you know, that are, we're a training facility. You know, I'm not going off and saying, okay, believe me, you know, I make more money if I was doing a class this week. You know what I mean? And so, and a lot less stress and a lot less worries and a lot less pressure.
If you got 100 people, you don't know.
Yeah.
Well, you may know half of them, but there's going to be.
But, you know, the staff, it's a huge, you know, it's a, mm-hmm. it, matches are a burden. If you do it right, you know what I mean? If you do it right. And we're known, you know, we do the matches right. You know, we have, you know, a nice thing after and, you know, we enjoy each other and we have really good stages and stuff like that. But again, you know, ours are not coming from, you know, okay, let's make something up. No, everything out here, with the exception of one event, you know, this weekend, is it's based in something that has happened. You know what I mean? It's something that has happened somewhere. And, you know, it could have been a military shooter, could have been a federal guy, could have been a local, state, something, police officer, could have been a hunting scenario.
Yeah.
You know, then
well, remember the 11-foot shot?
Yeah.
We did an 11-foot shot.
11-foot, 1-inch.
Yep.
Yep.
Because that was a real shot that happened in a trailer.
Yep, exactly right.
And, you know, the sniper came in. There's a stack in front of him. There's a guy holding his hostage, and 11 foot away, the sniper took the shot.
Yeah. He didn't survive.
No.
No, he didn't make it.
But we did that here.
Yeah,
we did it here. And it was like, are you kidding me, people? We had the car.
Yeah.
It was at night.
Yeah.
With a car, I don't want to say too much, but had lights going.
Yeah.
And there was...
Had a couple of cop cars there all lit up with sirens.
We just parked them and turned them on and fired everything up. And in between the two, the headlights were illuminating the board. You had to make an 11-foot shot.
Yeah.
What's your dope for 11 feet?
Yeah, nobody knows.
Yeah, 1,200 yards.
Yeah.
But it's that kind of stuff.
Right.
You know, even the straight down off the tower.
Yep.
We would do 21 feet from the bottom of the tower there, roughly.
Yeah.
And somebody was on top of a building and somebody comes out the door.
With an AK.
Yeah. What do you do? You got to take a shot straight down.
Yeah.
He doesn't know you're up there, but you're, what's that shot?
Well, the dude was in the bottom floor
mm-hmm.
and the AK guy.
Yeah.
And one of the good guys was up and he was servicing some targets. Well, the AK guy heard it. So he came out, you know, and he was
looking,
you know, firing off his AK up there. And so just said, all right, boom, straight down, you know, got him right in the top of the head. So again, everything is
out. There's dope involved.
There is dope involved.
Yeah. You know,
there
that's
is dope
what people
involved.
Don't realize is that there's a holdover. There's dope, whatever you want to use, whatever thing you want.
Exactly right.
So it's that kind of scenario that I don't understand it bugs me, and I'm too vocal about it sometimes publicly.
You?
No. Yeah, nah, man. No. I got Frank, mouth issues. No way. But it's one of those things that it drives me nuts, because there was a lot of good work done down here, mm-hmm. and I think it diminishes not what you there, but just the perception.
Sure.
It's not diminishing anything you do right. or here, but it's everybody else who doesn't know.
Well,
it's that why.
They're diminishing themselves and they don't realize it.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's like, I can go off and I can, you know, I can, I look at it like this. If I go up and I see a window, you know what I mean? Or I see a culvert, or I see a tank trap. To me, the only thing I see is a barricade.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're all barricades. You know, mm-hmm. I just feel like that. But, you know, let's not get too crazy to where we're just doing the same shit over and over to benefit, you know, a certain, you know, group or style of shooting.
Right.
I want you out of your comfort zone. You know what I mean? I want you doing stuff. I want multiple targets at multiple distances with movers thrown in. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I want something that, you know, is going to go out there and make you understand
shots off the barrel.
Yeah.
The left-hand stuff.
Yeah.
You know, all that things yeah. that we would do is to get you out of your comfort zone.
Exactly right. And people freak out when I make them rest a barrel on a wire. Mm-hmm. Oh, no. No, no way. It's going to break my gun. You know, it's not good for it. I paid a lot of money to have a free-floated barrel and everything else. So, yeah, you're talking about a hammer. It still works. You know what I mean? Let's go and do it so you'll know what happens.
Now, yeah. It's interesting that way that, you know, it's season. So if you were talking to them, what would you recommend? I mean, the movement side of things, there's the positional side of things. Where do you see some changes that you would take that? If they said, hey man, you're in charge of the NRL tomorrow, and you had one recommendation to put out to match directors as far as their matches go, what would you say to them?
You know, Frank, that's a...
It's a huge question.
It's a huge question.
It really is.
And here's the thing. The most truthful answer that I would tell you is this, is I would say, be creative.
Yeah, mix it up. My answer would be mix it up.
Yeah, be creative. Do mm-hmm. do something different. Don't make it stupid. You know what I mean?
Right,
make
not
it realistic.
Contrived.
Yeah, make it realistic.
You don't have to contrive it.
But no, you don't. And the thing about it is I like to preface that I would never tell a match director what to do.
Right.
I get that. Yeah.
And I get that.
Yeah.
If
the match director came to me and said, I want some advice from you, that's what I would say. Be creative. You know what I mean? And don't get into the same rut where you're doing the same thing every single time or some sort of twist it up. It's like the one event that we have coming up this weekend. It's called Frustration Ladder. And so what I have is from one position on the tower, you can shoot KD, known distance, from 300 to 1,000. So it's 8 targets. And so the way we started it was, you know, it's 16 rounds. You know, if you shoot 300, you got a point. You shoot 400, or no, it was 3 points, and you got 4 points and 5 points. It was all
like
in the...
Like KYL.
Like, yeah, but you go out. But then if you miss 600, you had to go all the way back to 300 and lost all your points.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what are we doing here? What are we doing? We're learning about dope. We're learning about using the reticle. We're learning about having the same wind condition but different distances and what mm-hmm. it's going to do to you on that. And so, again, I think I had like one or two people clean that. And so then we changed it up. Now we're doing reverse frustration ladder. You know what I mean? So you're starting at 1,000.
Right.
And so you're coming backwards at that point for a total of 8 points. And what we're doing on those, what we're doing is we're testing wind reading skills and fundamentals, you know. The reason that we call it Frustration Ladder is because I came up with that name because I shot it. And I got, oh, this is frustrating as hell.
Mm-hmm.
Because you go out and you hit your 1,000 and you miss your 900. So you're back to 1,000 and you miss your 900.
And 9's weird here.
9's very weird here. So what happens? You get frustrated. You start to let the fundamentals go by the wayside because you're starting to think and you know that that clock's ticking. You know what I mean? So your fundamentals start to go by the wayside. Whereas mm-hmm. you just stop, take a deep breath. You know what I mean? Hit your 1,000, hit your 9, hit your 8. Hit your 7, come all the way back with it, and remain calm. You know what I mean? But then we have the other ones too. Like we have the other ones like the mousetrap. You know, that gets your heart rate up. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That gets your heart rate up. You're shooting little bitty targets. We've even done the mousetrap on a mover before.
Right.
And so we want to be able to, you know, at that point, we want to be able to test, you know, how well can you think? I've done the mousetrap before to where it's at a national level match, and it's like 4 minutes, okay? Mousetrap in 4 minutes is easy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I've also done the mousetrap in 2 minutes. And so that's as a match director, what I'm saying is, I'm going to give you a time limit, okay? If you know that it is physically impossible
to finish,
then what is your game plan? Your game plan is every target you do get to, you hit.
Right.
You know what I mean? So let's say you missed positions 3 and 4, but you cleaned, you know, 1 and 2. You know, you got the maximum amount of points that were actually done. Mousetrap's been done. A clean run, the fastest time has ever been like 2 minutes, 13 seconds with cleaning it, mm-hmm. you know, cleaning it, going all the way through just to see how fast you could go. And so if you come up and you say, okay, I know that history of it. This is the Mousetrap's iconic, you know, it's famous. Yeah. And so if Jacob comes up and says it's a 2 minute thing, I'm going to try to get positions 1, 2, 3, and maybe one shot off 4, but I know I'm not going to get to 5.
Right.
So I'm not going to worry about getting to 5. Every time I pull the trigger on 1, 2, 3, and 4,
I'm going to get my hits.
You know, so we want to make people think, you know, what is the best way to solve this? You know, it's kind of cool. I mean,
yeah, it's definitely a good thing. And I, like I said, I don't think people realize just how much came out of South Texas mm-hmm. in the nucleus. I mean, there was a series before, mm-hmm. what was it? International Rifleman's League.
I don't remember.
The Paradise one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there was.
Right? And then, yeah. You know, there was all these things that people are doing today had already been done.
Yeah.
Not well.
Yeah.
And there needed to be some things done better.
Sure.
And there always is ways to do things better, but it's not new.
No, it's not new.
And, yeah. And that's the thing.
But people, like you said earlier, people think this started in 2012. It didn't.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It didn't. You know, doing competitions for a decade before then. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, just relax, man. I mean, it's good. We need a scoring clearinghouse. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We need that. But, you know, just let the match directors do what they want, man. You know, just let
right.
them do what they
but,
want.
But at the same time, we don't need the mindless repetition either.
No, absolutely not.
You know,
we got to do new stuff.
Be your own.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some really good bucket list matches out there
mm-hmm.
where they don't do a lot. They do one or two mm-hmm. a year. If that, and they might only do one a year.
Right.
But it's so well, they use up the entire year to think it out.
Right.
It's a really well done match.
Sure.
And I like that idea than just churning and burning and churning and burning and churning and burning.
Yeah.
Or doing the same thing twice, just changing the time.
Right.
You know, that drives me a little nuts. It's like, all right, well, we're going to do the same match. Or I've even seen, okay, you're going to shoot 1 through 10 today and then 10 through 1 tomorrow.
Right. Yeah, I've heard about that.
And it's like, yeah, come on,
give me some creativity here.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's like there's a group of shooters out in West Texas. Nobody really knows about them that much, you
mm-hmm.
know, but they go out and they're shooting like AR-15s and AKs, you know, and it's like they have it set up to where you could do like a 3K, a 5K, or a 10K.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is with guns.
Yeah.
It's you're running with guns.
Biathlon's just not with snow.
Yeah. And so you get people that go out there and they have a great time. So it's like wearing like kilts and sandals, you know what I mean? Just
mm-hmm.
to go over and see what they can do. And you know, nobody really knows about it. You know, we sponsor it, and it's those guys are just, they're good shooters, man. They're having a really good time. I mean,
they're working on it.
Yeah. Every shot they're taking, they're huffing and puffing, you know, so they're actually working for it.
I miss the huffing and puffing people
yeah.
do. You know, I think that went to the wayside. I mean, the last one that I really saw and it got, I don't even think they do it anymore. It was like the Grind It Out that George did.
Mm-hmm.
That was a movement. And to me, that kept rifle weights down
mm-hmm.
when you had to move.
One
of my favorite match stages here was the pistol drag and the run up.
Yeah.
Dragging the
80 pounds. That was brutal.
Yeah.
80 that was
pounds.
Brutal.
You had a fight. You're dragging a man down.
Mm-hmm.
You're fighting with one hand with a pistol with your rifle on your back. Then when you brought him to the end, 100 yard, you dragged him.
Yeah.
Was it 10 or 5 targets? 5, I think, right?
It was 5 pistol targets.
5 pistol targets, dragging 80 pounds of whatever, it was like molasses chips or something.
Yeah.
Then fighting with your pistol, then you drop the bag, and then you ran up the backside of the 100-yard berm.
And you had to make a shot.
Do your rifle shots on the other side.
Yeah. Well, you started it with the rifle shot, too.
That's right.
Yeah.
I forgot that
you
part.
You started on a one-inch dot. So you had a rifle shot, then you slung your rifle empty, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And then you pulled out your pistol, and you had those 5 targets, and then drop your bag because you were dragging, shooting one hand. It was a great event.
Yeah.
Great event.
And then
wore out the range officers, though.
Yes, because you had to run back and forth.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That was a big thing. Like Damien here would be racing. Who can race, you know, back and forth the most? That's still dry. I talk to the Canadian dudes all the time.
Yep.
When you were here, they were running the obstacle course.
Yep.
And you said, get on the four-wheeler and chase them. And the guy turned to me and goes, you're not going to ride the four-wheeler, are you? I said, well, not now.
Not now. I would have if you hadn't said nothing.
You douchebag.
we were younger then.
Yeah. Hey, let's talk, before we end up here, we'll get done with the hour. Talk about the distillery. You guys have the Wild Horse Distillery on here.
Yeah, correct. It's on site here at Rifles Only. We've been messing with it, you know, for a lot of years, you know, just, you know, single gallon tabletop stills. We came up with the flavors, and then that evolved into a 5-gallon still, then a 40-gallon still, then twin 150s, and Now we're up at a 500 gallon still, and we're completely legit now.
Yeah. I mean,
which means all we're doing is paying our taxes. So it's worked out real good. We have three rums that we offer right now. We won an award for one of our rums already, and we've only been doing this about a year and a half, you know, in the legit side of the house. We're in over 150 locations here in Texas.
Nice.
And it's growing. It's growing really fast. It's hard for us to keep up now, so I'm wondering what it's going to be like in another 3 years.
Exactly. And yep. You said guys can order it online through Total Wine.
Yeah, if you're in a state that allows you to have spirits delivered to your door. In Texas, you can't do it.
Right.
I mean, I can order beer and I can order wine, but I can't order spirits. But there are some states that do allow it. So if you're in those places, you go to Total Wine, their Spirits Direct program, mm-hmm. and just look up Wild Horse Distillery Rum, and all three of our rums will pop up. And you can order it and have it delivered to your house.
Yeah, but it's over in the North Pasture now. You got the building up. I remember walking. We used to shoot up there and shoot back the other way. There was like a little berm, weird hill up there.
Yeah.
But you're talking about walking and talking with Godferson. I remember coming back one night. We did a night shoot out there.
Mm-hmm.
And we were walking back, and he tripped and fell.
Mm-hmm.
And he was all, you know, I fell. I'm like, don't worry. It was like the first time I met Godferson, I think it was. And I was walking with him. And he's like, he was kind of embarrassed that he fell.
Yeah.
And I'm like, don't worry about it, dude. I go, I fell once too. Like, I was three at the time.
Yeah. I was three, but you know, hey, it's all right.
Yeah.
You're older. So maybe that's where I'm headed to.
Yeah, exactly.
A little bit more clumsiness.
But I mean, that's the thing is the camaraderie down here and the events that you had and the friendships made. I think I've been to other matches recently in the last year. They click off.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys never really clicked off here. Everybody's hung around. Everybody, you know, we had a clam bake last night or something.
Yeah, oyster bake last night, yeah.
And you know, there was always, how many times you see you guys with your green eggs cooking steaks for everybody, the grills. There'd be three, four grills out here with half the field working them.
Yeah.
And I always liked that. And I think that's the part people don't understand. They have a thimble full of the history.
Yeah.
And they're missing like, well, why was it that way then? And it's not quite that way now.
Yeah.
And they're missing the elements in between.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
It's been a huge evolution on the things that we do.
Right.
You know? And it's just like we're talking about the first PR 1 and 2s were 8 days.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And 1,000 rounds. And now they're 5 days. And like 400 rounds are doing 10 times as much.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Doing 10 times more things like in combining on the training and everything. So we're at a training facility. You know what I mean? We do the matches because they're fun and, you know, it gets everybody together and, you know, gets everybody to have a good time. And we don't click off. You know, normally everybody kind of hangs out and, you know, gets to see one another and enjoy one another. But, you know, just I guess, you know, the main thing of it now, like if I look at what the problem is someone just needs to get in there. They can't buy skill. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know what I mean?
You can't. And it's been mentioned a lot on this podcast.
Yeah.
You can't buy skill. You could do really well buying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hits.
Yeah.
But that's not going to carry you. It is, you know, we were talking at SHOT Show and it's one variable.
Yeah.
All you got to do is change one variable and that purchase product don't work no more.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, and so that's an important part, but the fundamentals never are affected by the system.
No,
could be handgun, could be carbine, could be bolt gun.
Well, I don't know if we talked about it last time. You know, the thing about it is the fundamentals are going to, what's going to do it. You know what I mean? And it's like, you know, we'd spoken last time. We would say there's 80 matches in the U.S. now.
80, something like that.
Something like 80 matches. But we don't have anyone who wins all the time.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That was a big thing. Who's the one standout guy? Yeah.
Or girl.
Girl, you know? Right.
Who you don't, we don't have that person to where if you show up, you're fighting for second.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We just, that person doesn't exist because, you know, you get some people who have won multiple matches and stuff like that, but you could beat them at any time. You know, just one variable, like you said, one variable and boom, they could be beaten.
Mm-hmm.
And so
you were that one guy at the time.
Yeah.
Now people don't think you compete, but there was less matches. Don't get me wrong.
There was less matches.
But you were, if you showed up, people got depressed.
Yeah.
You know, they were fighting for second. Unless something fundamentally happened, which was rare.
No, I won.
But
I
mean, so we'll go, because we mentioned it in the other one before we end up. Let's talk about the balloons, because that was funny. So Jacob and I, we're running matches, and we decide we're going to shoot one of the matches.
Yep.
So we want to shoot. So that was the thing, is we didn't want to shoot our own match, but at this time we did. We said, listen, we're all just going to have a fun shoot.
Yeah, no, it was a fun shoot.
So we had a mover stage, and there was three balloons. You had two green and a red. The goal was to shoot the green, not the red. Or was it two red and a green? It
whatever.
Was whatever it was. But you didn't shoot the red balloon.
Right.
So Jacob was the 12th shooter, and everybody before then is cleaning the balloons. One through 11 cleaned it. Jacob turns to me and he goes, watch this. He walks up to the stage and he shoots the red balloon.
DQ.
Right. Zero to stage. Well, after that,
nobody. For the next 40 people, no one cleaned it.
Yeah.
No one cleaned it.
It's a head game, man.
Yeah, it was all a head game.
It's that kind of thing that people don't get, that it can change that quickly. It's so mental.
Yeah. You know? I won that one too, though.
You did win it.
Yeah. No, it's a mental game for sure. I mean, you gotta be calm, breathe it through. See what you're gonna do on those stages and just do it. You know what I mean? And don't let the fundamentals go by the wayside. You know, you gotta let the fundamentals guide you. I mean,
I had asked them, what's the one thing you tell students to take away, and it would be dry practice.
Yep.
And so, like I said, we got that lost episode. Drives me crazy. I must not have hit end or something. Freaking stupid.
Maybe you find it one of these days.
It'll pop up like a weekend. I'll put it up if it does.
Perfect.
But it's definitely that dry practice helps, because you even say with barricade training.
Yeah.
You don't learn barricades on the range. You learn them in your living room.
That's right.
Or in your garage.
Yeah.
You know, chairs, tables.
Yeah.
If you build a barricade.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about all that stuff. Like, and then it's practice and repetitions, and those practice and repetitions can be done dry.
Yep.
So make sure you look at that. Lindy had come in earlier, and Lindy's an instructor here. We've been here forever. Super smart guy. We talk about breathing drills and different things with breathing, and that's my Achilles heel. But Lindy was here dry practicing to run the bolt on the he was coming off on the exhale and running it, or in the inhale. I'm getting it backwards now. So he was inhaling and running the bolt, and then as he exhaled, he's coming to the trigger and breaking the shot, and then he's inhaling and the bolt comes up, and he's exhaling, the bolt comes down, and he's on the trigger again. So he's practicing to break at the bottom of the breathing cycle. And you had mentioned Lisa doing the same thing with a handgun.
Yeah.
She would only break the shot on the bottom of her breathing cycle.
While she was driving.
While she drove.
Yeah, while she was driving. She click, click. So that she can't even pull the trigger unless she's at the bottom of her breathing cycle.
Right. And I mean, when she competed, she smoked people. She embarrassed people hard.
Yeah.
And she had learned, when you guys were the horse people here and all that, she was a horse shooter. And
yeah,
she was really hard to beat.
That's another amazing thing. Everybody thinks the H-59's new.
Yeah, they don't know nothing about what you did, man. Well, it happens. Yeah,
it happens.
You know,
it happens.
Look up your history, man. And I will tell you something. If you're not looking around this part of South Texas, you're probably looking in the wrong places. You need to go back further.
Yeah. This is where it began.
Yeah, think about it. This was the Horace training facility before it was, and that came out of the Safari Club.
Yep.
I mean, rifles only. You could tell them it was rifles only because you worked through the Safari Club.
Sure.
When I met you, you were going. You talk about ELR shooting. We'll do this last story and we'll be good. But you're gonna shoot the tar at like 1500 in New Zealand.
Yeah.
And you were practicing to shoot the tar.
Man. What is that? You know, I go out there and I'm doing 2-a-days with a 300 Win Mag. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm burning through ammo, and I mean, I know I'm going to waste a barrel before I get out there. Everything's good. Head out there to shoot the tar, get up on the mountain, you know, everything that it takes to get up to where this is. And I spot this tar, you know, and as I range it 600 yards, boom, dial it up. And I'm thinking, you know, that tar's like quartering towards me. Why am I going to make this shot now? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I range it again, 500, come down on the dope. Range it again, 250, come down on the dope. Now I got my 100-yard dope on, and it's still not even changing direction at all. So now I'm starting to come down on the power, you know, and it's just kind of like, it got to that point to where I stood up, I shouldered the rifle, and I shot. I shot him right in the fur. It's all I could see. You know what I mean? Took 5 steps and put my hands on him. You know, had I not practiced,
right,
it would have been 1,100 yards with the wind blowing 60 miles an hour with him running. You know what I mean? But I just ready for it. You know what I mean? It was kind of fun. That was a good trip.
But you were international shooting animals internationally. Your dad was a big Safari Club guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that kind of stuff.
And, yeah, it was good stuff.
Yeah. And that's where rifles only came from, because you were doing Safari Club things and reloading for people. And
yeah. Yeah. That started out as, you know, just taking their guns, you know, their, you know, their Weatherbys and stuff like that, and doing load development on them, you know, for them. And then, you know, I'd come up, do, you know, make up 100 rounds, and, you know, that'll pretty much last a trophy hunter their life.
Right,
you know, they're
right.
only firing once or twice a year. But yeah, that was how it started out. And then, you know, I was still building the 338 Lapua ammo before it was 338 Lapua, and that was kind of cool. Shooting long range with 300 Win Mag, you know, mm-hmm. that was a deal. And I think that kind of helped me. That and shooting prairie dogs, it got to where, you know, I could read wind, you know, pretty well. So I think whenever I did start in the competition, all those things kind of in the background helped me to
work out,
get that point to where, I mean, and again, I wasn't really presented, well, I mean, with a target that I couldn't hit. There was there was one place I went to go and shooting and stuff like that, and they finally just said, you know, you're cheating. And I said, well, how the hell am I cheating? I'm shooting it exactly the way,
yeah,
you know, everybody else
you're,
is.
You're standing over me.
Yeah, guys, it was like, I'm doing this. Well, you've been here 4 times, you won every time. I said, yeah, mm-hmm. you know, yeah, sure, but I'm not cheating. I'm not, yeah.
Is that everybody, Bobby?
Yeah, but yeah. I'm not cheating, you know what I mean? And it's just like, you know, now, I mean, I abhor the cheaters, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? I feel like, you know, as a match director, you know what I mean? If I give you a stage description, you're not stupid. You know the way that's supposed to be shot.
Right.
But now we have to line up every little freaking detail. Yeah, I got a book.
Yeah, I got to put shit in my book. All right. Thanks for doing this again. Twice. Freaking lost episodes. The lost episodes are so good, and they suck. I have 2 of them now. God damn it. All righty. We're out of here before I mess this one up.
Later.
Later.